Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P on 97.3 ESPN.
So much happening, so much going on. I am loving it. Hey, you're inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. We have October 11th and 12th. Okay, this coming week, it is the bear season. Archery first 3 days and muzzleloader with the archery through next Saturday. This coming week also and the next week, the fall trout stocking program is underway. We're going to be discussing that in the upcoming segment. But what's happening down there along the Jersey Shore, Cape May area down through there, we have some red fishing going on. Promise you last week we're going to cover that. We have a special guest coming on to talk the redfish opportunities. And Fish and Wildlife's R3 has a mentored squirrel hunt coming up. If you want to register for that, we're going to be covering that as well. Just a reminder, antlered buck permits for the permit bow season must be purchased by November 1st at 11:59 p.m. You can get that online or go to a licensed issuing agent during the business hours. But get it now, man. And also for permit muzzleloader, it's going to be December 1st. And for permit shotgun, December 17th. And a reminder, next week, super great event at the Great Red Wing Sporting Clays. This is the second annual Ed Marcassi Memorial Shoot by the New Jersey Outdoor Alliance. Sign in 8 a.m. to 11. Shoot starts at 9 a.m. $75 entry fee includes 100 rounds of clays over 15 stations, lunch and cold beverages, NJOA cap. It's for a great cause. Ed Marcassi was a great guy. Red Wing Sporting Clays, 317 Suey's Landing Road in Port Republic. Go to NJO, New Jersey Outdoor Alliance, rather, .org to find out the information. Coming up, we're talking redfish. Captain Al Cardelli, grab that cup. Grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. So much going on.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. on 97.3 ESPN.
Yeah, back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Week of October 11th and 12th. Hey, you're tuned in 7 to 8 a.m. to 50,000 mega far-reaching watts of the Rack and Fin Radio terrestrial message, 97.3 ESPN FM. Streaming live, 97.3ESPN.com. You can download the 97.3 app or go to Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or other platforms for the Rack and Fin Radio message. The podcast is generally posted Saturday afternoons or sometime Sunday. And away we go. Last week, we had Courtney Marie Wozniak from Fish Bites with those new Fish Bites mullet, man. Raising hell on there. Mullet, we were talking redfish, Jersey redfish. I promise you, there was going to be a special guest today. He was one of the first guests ever on Rack and Fin when we started 22 years ago. And over the decades, it's been a source of very reliable and enjoyable and sometimes hilarious information, but always accurate to the point. Captain Al Cardelli. Down there in Sea Isle, we're talking redfish down there, Cape May County. Now, this nor'easter, it's going to raise a little bit of havoc, but we shall see what his prognostication is and some redfish tactics. Captain Two Live Crew, how are you?
Good morning, Tom. Whew, man, she's building to be a blow.
This is going to be some funky, gnarly, and whatever, Al. But again, this storm will ignite. I mean, the red's still going to be around. What about the stripe run? This is about when it happens, correct?
Yeah, it started already. I've seen a couple of redfish tailing. I'm following some bait schools around. All the mullet schools that are still available with the water temperature staying the way it is, staying up high. There's plenty of mullet around still. Although fragmented, you know, the big schools aren't as thick as they were a week ago, but they're still around in smaller batches, which is actually better for fishing as far as I'm concerned. It doesn't draw as many other predators. Last week with the big schools of mullet, there was sharks and smaller stripers and things like that. They were harassing the mullet and making it a little difficult. But, the redfish that are around are definitely starting to key in on this. This weather ought to be perfect for them.
Al, these reds, I mean, people say redfish, and I go into this, I'm going to say it one more time, people, we have the climate change. Now, redfish used to be very prominent from Ocean City down to Jersey.
Oh, absolutely.
And now over to the water quality chain, went into the toilet, whatever, they're back. And Al, they've been around now, in fact, during the Governor's Surf Tournament, they even have a category now for redfish. Al, when did you notice, as a retired charter captain, one of the best out there, Can I mention a boat, Al? It was the greatest name. Bayhound Charters caught my biggest fluke of my life with Captain Allen about 9 feet of water behind Avalon Yacht Club, but that's another story. Al, when did you notice, not one, not two, but hey, man, they're hearing some numbers. And by the way, people, there's a bite going on in Great Bay with a moor towards the spring, but that's another story as well. Al, when did you start to say, hey, this is more than a coincidence. There are reds here. When did you notice it?
Well, I probably you hit the nail on the head when the water started getting a lot cleaner here along the coast. I mean, once they took the sewer plants offline, and it was a noticeable cleaner water, and it had a lot to do with the correlation with muscle growth. We had a little break in the muscle growth when Sandy came through, but prior to that, the muscles were terrific, and they are again. And I think muscle beds and shell beds, things like that, are very important. To draw them into your area, as is our inlet systems. Our inlets here, they're quick to the back bay. They're short. You know, they're not big long passes to get into the back. Uh-huh. Short in and outs, and I think that attributes to that, and also the speckled trout that we encounter this time of year.
The specks, Al, and you turned me on to those, and actually, shout out to the great man Dick Wood, but he just sort of mentioned it, and he said, don't you write about this.
Yeah.
But Al,
Dick was on them too.
Yeah, and Al, when you turned me on it, listen, weak fish are great. These are greater exponentially. So, yeah. Al, we're seeing these southern species up here that I guess reclaim their territory. But Al, the reds, now you have people say, oh, it's only one fish. So what? I think it's 18 to 20 to under 27. But Al, I'm seeing, or I've had photos sent to me, there are some also in the surface. You got some bulls out there, Al.
A couple that were caught, not by myself or anyone that with me, but I've seen a couple in the 30-pound class that were caught within the last year or so. And they're caught even further out in the ocean by guys looking for other things. Sea bass season, I think it has a lot to do with the weather, way the weather's been this past month, but I haven't heard anything. But a lot of the guys, I know last year a lot of them were caught out further. The guys looking for sheabash, but the ones that are back here, they're keyed in the same kind of stuff as the stripers are. Mm-hmm. Although when they mix together, they get a little more difficult as something else to your hook. But the good old pop and cork rig is the way to go right now. What you use behind it, the new fish bites mullets are dynamite behind, especially rigged Texas style.
Bingo.
A lot of the baits that are quality for that really work well for reds do require a little more rigging than just slamming them on a jig head. The lightweight it keeps the bait suspended a lot more. The lightweight of the buried hook, of the weedless hook, makes it castable, makes it as does the popping cork, but it keeps the descent behind the plug a lot slower, so you're not just dragging a 3/8 ounce head behind the back of the popping cork where it's just jerking along. This kind of raises, every time you pop the cork, kind of raises the bait in the water and then allows it to fall slowly. And the buoyancy and the paddle and the tail, keeps it up in the strike zone a little longer. Because the red is going to be attracted to the popping cork, whichever. Mm-hmm. Whichever you choose to use now in choppy water, one that makes a lot of noise, be a concave popping cork or a one with a lot of rattles, obviously would be the best bet. Sometimes in calm, quiet water, just a regular small float that can disturb the top of the water other than having something that really rattles and makes a lot of noise. Could be more beneficial. That goes with with his conditions. But for the most part, I'm using something a little rattling that makes a little bit of a rattle. Usually 30 inches behind the back of the cork to wherever your object is. That's the easiest casting length. You don't want it much shorter. I have used short and leader after retying and causes just bluefish around. They tend to be a little more a little more on the attack with it closer to the float. But that's my number one way to go. But you don't have to fish an artificial behind that either, guys. You can fish a live mullet just as easily as you can.
Yeah.
And then just but don't let out don't forget about a dead mullet, guys. A half of a dead mullet drifted out or on a fish finder rig is deadly for redfish too. For some reason, they like a half a mullet, especially put on a hook and squashed, if you will. Stepped on, made the eyeballs pop and the guts come out, and then whip that out there and see what happens, because that's one of their favorite baits.
Yeah, Al, they're very scent-oriented. They're sometimes referred to as like the poor man's bonefish. Hell with that. The popcorn with a bonefish, they are a little wet. They're gone. Another thing, too, you can't eat bonefish. Eat redfish. But, Al, now they have the inferior mouth, underslung mouth, but they are, too, and their eyesight's incredible, and their olfactory sense, smell. They'll key in on something. Crew, do you find these reds now, over the years that you've been tracking them, have you seen them? Are they traveling in, like, pods or schools? Or is like, listen, when you see them tailing, that is so cool. That's why the reference to bonefish. Yes. But what do you noticing numbers this time of year?
I have seen groups of fish, but believe it or not, that's been in warmer times of the year. I've seen them in groups of five or six, actually possibly more. One day on the Avalon side of Townsend Zinlet, I couldn't be honest to tell you, but it looked like it could have been maybe 10, 12 fish that day.
Nice.
But earlier in the season, more in the end of August, I believe that was, and they were larger fish than I tend to encounter. They looked to me to be 30-inch fish or so. When they're on bait, when they're feeding, and they do feed at night, they just make a little bit different sound than a striper on bait. But they work a school of bait. Seems like they'll position themselves around it and raise to it. So yeah, they definitely are in bunches. Although I've never been fortunate enough up here to catch more at one time. More than one at one time. I've never had like a multiple hookup or anything like that. Although, I'm sure it's possible.
Yeah, we're speaking, Captain Al. Go ahead.
I've caught more than one in one outing, but I have not ever hooked up like two at once or anything like that. So, but they do feed in groups. I can attest to that.
Okay, we're speaking, Captain Al Cardelli, formerly retired captain, great captain, based out of Seattle. But crew, here's the thing: we caught them again farther south. Shout out! I don't know if he's still alive. My main man Zudi down here in Cocotree, Louisiana. Al, we caught him on poppers. I mean, fish get aggressive as all get out. Granted, warmer water down there, but is there an artifice like a popper bite, surface bite this time
of
year?
Absolutely, one of the first encounters, or one of the first multiple days I ever had was on a striper outing. It was in late August a few years ago, and we were targeting stripers I think we were trying to creek chub knuckleheads at the time. We had a bunch to try out. They're a type of popper.
Uh-huh.
And we caught two that day on them mixed right with the stripers. So, that was early in the season. But it was, they were eating peanut bunker and small bluefish that year. There were snapper blues around, and they really enjoyed. Remember, we had a legal one that I cleaned that had a whole snapper blue in its belly. That particular year. So they have a lot to eat up this way. There's a lot of food for them. Again, they're not something you're going to go out and lay waste, but they are something neat to say you caught up here, and they're definitely available.
And now, it's almost like a hunting thing. You hunt these things down. The stripers, again, numerous, they're great. Again, the trout, another thing, hunting. So this time of year adds a new dimension to it,
Exactly, and the popping cork, guys, and the popping cork will get you a lot of other places. Even though you have to let them go, you'll pick off leftover fluke with the popping cork, bluefish. The louder the cork, not always you're going to catch many weak fish, but it's possible, and stripers. I've caught trying them for redfish up this way, guys, with the popping cork. I've caught more, I can honestly tell you, I've caught more stripers on the popping corks than I have reds, but the possibility and the fact that that there is some here is definitely worth it.
Al, for the reds, owing to their inherent wariness, do you think, really, when that kind of water, they're up on the flats or whatever, and I want to get to the before we have to go to heartbreak, I want to get to the prime tides. Fluorocarbon necessary in your rule book?
Well, I use it pretty much primarily anyway because of its hardness. I'm pretty much all switched to braid now, so I'm tying in a leader. I don't tie anything direct to braid. So I am using a leader one way or the other. But, up to 30 pounds, they do have, they are rough fish, and they are fish, and they and they are living in rough areas. So, like as I said earlier, mussel beds and mussel beds, rough stuff. I've encountered a couple wild sheephead fishing. They love crabs also. Sheephead, early tog, trigger fishing is also, so that, you know, that's another environment that lends to fluorocarbons. So yeah, I definitely recommend using leader material. And fluorocarbons is the best because, you know, line shy and hardness. You know, it is a hard material.
Al, before we close it out, prime tidal times, and listen, there is a night, but just be careful if you're gonna be out there tonight. Prime tides, Al, what do you think?
Well, you know, you want moving tide. Top of the tide gives them more, makes it more difficult for you to find the fish because there's more areas to feed. And redfish will feed anywhere from inches of water, as I said, out to 80 feet. So, you know, that makes it a little difficult to begin with. One thing I can tell you is that they're not crazy about hard tides to be in feeding. They will feed on the hard tide. But they'll be out of the way. They'll be ambushing from out of the way. Their preferred method, their most relaxed method is meander in a mellow tide and feed on things that they're searching for. Like on the shallower beds and edges. Edges of surf guys run into them all the time by casting to the edge of the break, not casting so far. You know, there's a lot of neat scenarios just set up along the surf. For people, surf guys run into a lot of bugs from them, maybe not knowing what they are, you know. And I know more than a few get caught on swimming plugs every year as like a bomber, SP minnow.
SP minnows kind of are badass bait. Yeah.
Yep. And nighttime, there's a lot of baits that glow. UV baits are real good too. And fishing, a Texas-based company makes an excellent twister tail UV type of bait. The fish bites, anything with a scent, like you said earlier, is really good. Fish bites, mullets. I got a couple to try. I know they're going to work well. And regular gulps is phenomenal for redfish, especially in the shrimp pattern, that kind of thing. You know, they're great under the popping cork. So there's a lot of things to play with. And not only will you, not only are you wasting your time just using this and that, you'll get bites from other things. You keep yourself occupied while you're fishing for them. It's not like it's a redfish or nothing. You know, you're mixing it up.
Okay, listen, it's Captain Al Crudelli. Oh, man, redfish are here. They're going to be sticking around for a while. Remember, it's in the regulations. It's called red drum. You have one fish 18 inches to less than 27 inches, no close season. Get out there, hunt them down. It is a hunting experience, especially in those Back Bay areas. Captain Crew, thanks for joining us. Let's tune you in when the specs are here, my brother.
All right, I'll be ready for you. And don't forget, we have Run That Dog.
Oh, yeah. Bunny ties. You're killing me. I'm like, now I'm stretching another 1,000 areas. Take care, crew. Best
take
of the family.
Bye. See you, guys.
What a great captain. Longtime guest. Had some just fantastic fishing experience and loves to share the knowledge. Grab that cup. Grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. on 97.3 ESPN.
Here we go. Look out below. Back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of October 11th and 12th. Again, another happy new year going, because here it goes. Starting this coming Tuesday and running through next week, the fall trout stocking program will be underway. A couple little tweaks to it. We're looking at a total, people. Let's see. 20,440 two-year-old rainbows in that mix. There's going to be 1,000 breeders, up to 6+ pounds. Guaranteed, sort of, with my own two big buggy Italian eyes, in 35 waters over 20 counties. Yeah, Cape May counties love that, don't forget. In about, let's see, another 4 weeks or so, Ponder Lodge Pond will be in the November stocking. You can read all about it, October issue of the Fisherman Magazine. Great article, Fall into Winter Trout, on page 28. Gotten it going. Joining us on the line right now to talk about the fall stocking, he's been a guest about the past year, new to the game, but he is a trout stocking coordinator, Bureau of Freshwater Fisheries within DEP's Fish and Wildlife, and he's also assistant biologist. Very cool guy. Kyle Sauvier is on the line with us right now. Kyle, how you doing, man?
Good, Tom. How are you?
Trout time!
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Kyle, let's go. Listen, okay, the first week in the Rackenfin radio listening area, we have the, again, terrestrial radio here, we have Tuesday the 14th, both branches of the Matita Conks, the Toms and the Toms TCA, and the Manasquan River. The rest is primarily North Jersey. It's the second week that we're looking at. The 2 days, October 21st and October 22nd, we have South Jersey waters getting loaded up. We'll go into those in a little while. Kyle, some tweaks had to be made with this drought conditions, correct? Go into that, please.
Yeah, so just like last year, we're having some pretty low waters up in North Jersey and even in South Jersey with the rivers and everything. They're pretty low this year, so we've pretty much done the exact same thing we did last year. We're keeping the schedule the same, though, so rivers and streams and all are going out this week coming up, October 14th, and then the ponds and lakes will be going out their normal second week on the 21st. But we've had unfortunately, we can't stock any fish in the Black River right now up in yep. Hunterdon County. It's just too low.
So those fish will be spread out throughout the rest of the South Branch.
We've got up in the North Jersey, up in Warren, and we got the old Big Flat Brook. We've got some issues up there on the north part of that, above 206. So those fish are going to be spread out through the rest of the Flat Brook run.
You're killing me, Kyle. You're killing me.
Oh,
you're killing me.
Rain, we'd be good. Mother Nature's just not cooperating.
Listen, it was bears. It's bears. It's deer. It's ducks. It's stocked. But we'll have to venture downriver, but that's all right. I know it well.
Yep.
I know it well.
Yeah, unfortunately. And then just got two more updates with the Rockaway River. The north part of that above Dewey Ave up there is just, it's just low up there, too. Our biologist just went out and checked, and it's low. I mean, like everywhere is low. But those fish are going to be spread out through the lower part of the Rockaway. And then the Wallkill, the upper part of that, we've also had some issues. So we're spreading those out throughout the rest of the Wallkill.
Okay, but now for the second week, listeners, we are looking at G.M. Petro, Hamilton, Mary Elber, the Morris River. We have Crystal Lake, Grenlaw Lake, Oak Pond, Sylvan Lake. I mean, and then Wednesday we have Greenwich, and I love my Iona Lake, Shadler Sandwash Pond, and the most underrated South Jersey water, I think, from a strictly stock and catch. Not maybe Swedesboro Lake. It has some funky name in the digest. I don't know. But Kyle, great. I was up talked to Ed Conley, saw the fish up there in beautiful shape. The trucks are going to be rolling. It looks like a win-win all around.
Oh yeah, yeah. We're going to be throwing some big, beautiful trout out there. We're hoping hoping everybody gets out there, has a great time, catches these fish. That's why I put them out there for you guys. Catch those big breeders, even those 14 to 16 inch 2 year olds. They're great. They're going to be loaded in South Jersey ponds and pretty much everywhere we can throw them.
Kyle, a lot of ultralight fun here. And this is what I like about, especially in some of the lakes where you have room for a back. You got some great fall fly fishing here. And these trout, these rainbows are aggressive. Anything bright and shiny. I mean, these things go crazy. And then you have these rip your face off spent breeders. I'll tell you, Kyle, I saw some of those. Kyle said, don't fall in there, man. You may not come back out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got some big ones out there.
Okay, Kyle, you're sort of new to the game. When you came on board, the waters here that are chosen, are there any discussions prior to the next year or 2 years down the road adding, subtracting waters? How does that work?
Yeah, so as I believe, it's been put out, but we have our fish code change is coming up in 2026. So we're adding about 4,000 or so roughly fish to the fall program, but we're also joining the fall and winter together. So we're definitely looking at adding some new waters. Discussing that. We're in the discussions right now of trying to figure out what waters we want to add to the fall/winter program. But we're definitely going to have some new waters coming next year.
Yeah, listeners, these are some big ass hefty fish. This is the standard stocking down in the fall is 14 to 16 inches. The limit is 4. Okay.
Tom P, why isn't it 6?
It's a lot of meat, and I'm a meat guy. We know that. 4 of these things, and you're gonna be either walking with either a port or starboard list. Trust me on that. But Kyle, these crews getting out, and that's I guess lands management. These guys and gals are fantastic considering the loads they're carrying. I mean, and they are on time, and it's a great thing to see, and it really adds more to the autumn dimension in Jersey's freshwater fishing opportunities. Again, another angle is some of these lakes that they're putting the trout at, you don't have to keep it to the trout. You got bass, you got pickerel, you got crabby, you got yellow perch. It's a win-win all around.
Oh, yeah, we definitely want to make sure everybody's got a parade of different types of fish to catch. Like you just said, bass, pickerel, sunfish, yellow perch, crappie, rainbow trout when we stock them in there. But yeah, I mean, as you said before, we definitely rely on our lance management crew, and if it weren't for them, we wouldn't be able to have this possible. So they definitely do put in the good work and the hard work out in the field and getting those trout out to you guys out there.
Well, Kyle, listen, great job to everyone involved. Final question, because I've been asked this over the years, and I just shrug and say, I give the 908-236 number if you got my drift. Call them. Don't ask me. Well, you're the trout guy. Don't ask me. Kyle, deciding the numbers of fish to go, again, for the fall, especially, in the respective venue, is it access? Is it surface acreage, depth? What's the dealio?
Yeah, so for lakes and ponds, it's access, it's acreage, it's number of density of people in the area and the number of other trout waters in the area. So a pond that's bigger and doesn't have as many local trout stock waters besides itself is going to get a little bit of a bump compared to the ones that have three or four in close proximity or the smaller ponds.
Mm-hmm.
And then for our lakes and streams, it's all same thing. You got your access, but you also got miles. So the longer the river is, the more trout it's going to get.
I'll tell you, Kyle, I want to mention the Morris River for a simple reason. Mm-hmm. And Tom's resembled a little bit, than the Matitoconks up in Monmouth as well, or Monmouth and Ocean. But that's a tough trout water to fish. And I've seen guys tamed guys that are wizards on your freestone waters and limestone waters up in the northern tier counties. Come down here and they just want to pull their hair out, man. But we catch trout out of there right into July. Some of those spring fed areas on the Morris are wonderful.
Oh yeah. It's a great place in South Jersey that not a lot of people know about, with one of our only rivers stocked down here. And it definitely gives the guys living in South Jersey the chance to get some fly fishing going and catching those in that stream.
Kyle, listen, it's going to be a great, great next two, and these fish will last right through the winter season. So if you have open water in a few areas, the rare occasion we get ice in here in South Jersey, where it's legal, you can ice fish for them, and these fish hold over, and then you have the November stocking. South Jersey has some prime waters getting hit there as well. These fish will last through next spring, so when the standard stocking is going out 10 to 11 inches, all of a sudden a 16 inch comes up, or one of these big breeders, hey, man, it is definitely worth it. Again, the limit is 4. You can fish while the trout are being stocked. There's no close time on that. Kyle Sylvier, thanks for your input. Great job there, bro. Great job. You, Krause, the whole crew, Ed Conley up there, and the crew at the hatchery, and lands management for getting these fish out on time and in great shape. Super, super job. I'm going to see about getting you a raise, man. How's that? Okay, Kyle, listen, any questions on the South Jersey stocking? NJFishandWildlife.com. Go to the fishing link. Go to Freshwater. Trout has its own thing. All the numbers and everything are going to be up there. The changes are posted up there now. The stocking, the waters, and the respective numbers. Everything is there. Remember, license and trout tip. Hey, Sylvia, yeah, I know some guys who wait until now, honest to God, to buy their license and stamp now.
Hey, I mean, I would say buy at the beginning of the year so you can have the entire year to fish, but hey, they're buying trout stamps and licenses.
The one guy, I've met him several times at Creekside Outfit, a shout out up there in Waretown, he comes in late September because he wants to fish the toms. He said, because not that many people fish it in the fall compared to the spring when it's mobbed. I says, well, man, if it works for him.
Yeah, I mean, October's got beautiful weather to fish for these trout, so we definitely want people to get out there and get their licenses and trout stamps and go fishing.
Okay, and a little bit of just a little bit of awareness, people. Chiggers and ticks are still alive and active. Mm-hmm. Spray up, dress up for them. Kyle, take care. God swears we'll see you sometime, man.
Yeah, have a good one.
See you, man. Kyle Sylvier, great kid, young gun, man. Love the young blood in Fish and Wildlife. Okay, grab that cup, grab that rebel one more time. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. Oh, so much going on.
Saturday morning in the locker room with Billy Schwein, producer Nick Earnshaw, and former Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver Dave Klemek join me back in the studio. We'll get our reaction to the Phillies' loss to the NLDS. Then we'll go on the mound with former Phillies pitcher Tommy Green, brought to you by Blitz's Market of Ocean City. One last time. Hour two, we'll react to the Eagles' loss Thursday night to the Giants. Then it's our high school athletes in the spotlight with Fran McLaughlin, brought to you by the Philly Pretzel Factory of Egg Harbor Township. It's the locker room with Billy Schwein, Saturday morning from 10 a.m. to noon on 97.3 ESPN.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. on 97.3 ESPN.
Here we go. Look out below. Back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Week of October 11th and 12th. Just a reminder, this coming Wednesday at 11:59 p.m. is the deadline to register for the Youth Pheasant Hunt, which is going to run, I think it runs November 1st and November 3rd through 7th. You want the youngs, get, register. A lot of beautiful birds going on. We had Joe Lusky on talking about it. It's going to be a great thing, but you, no walk-ons. You want, oh, let's go pheasant. No can do. And just a reminder as well, the chuckers are being released for bird training on Black River, Pequest, Whittingham, Clinton, Assinpink, Colliers Mills, Manasquan, Stafford, Forge, Glassboro, Millville, and Tuckahoe. They were put out for today. They're also going to be put out for the 18th and the 25th. And something near and dear to my heart, the Recruitment, Retention, Reactivation Fish and Wildlife's R3 unit will be running a, check this out, how good is this? A squirrel hunting workshop, actually a upland game, small game hunting workshop, targeting, pun intended, squirrels. Join us online right now, a very special guest on Rack and Fin Radio, just her second appearance, and she kicked ass the first time, Tiffany Woolley. She's a Fish and Wildlife's R3 hunting, shooting, and program specialist. Let's talk Rocket J squirrels, for those of you old enough to remember. How you doing, Woolley?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on, Tom. I'm excited to talk about this.
Tell us about, it's a free workshop, people. This is so cool. Tell us about it. What do we got?
So we actually have two mentored hunting opportunities through this workshop. One's going to be in the northern region at the Clinton Wildlife Management Area, and that's going to be on Wednesday, October 22nd from 2:30 to 7 p.m. And then we're going to have a second opportunity, which will be Friday, October 24th from 2:30 to 7 p.m. at the Assinpink Wildlife Management Area. So you have two opportunities. The requirements for this program are just that you have to be 18 years and older. You need to possess your valid 2025 firearms hunting license or your all-around sportsman's license, and we even make the exception for apprentice firearms hunting license.
Oh, wow.
And they must provide their own firearm and hunting equipment, and our program provides all the ammo, and they can use a range of gauges. They can bring a 410 for their shotgun, 28 gauge, 20, 16, or 12. And this is a great opportunity because we're getting them out on public land, so we're showing them that this is something they can do on their own after this workshop. We're giving them the tools from A to Z for squirrel hunting. And then before the workshop, they're just required to attend a virtual squirrel teams meeting. And that would be Monday, October 20th from 7 to 8 p.m. So we can answer all their questions, squirrels, and we can go over the background of the program and what to expect on the day of their hunt.
Tiffany, I love squirrels. It's in my blood. That was one of the first things I ever hunted. I saw hunted. My cousin had beagles in the backyards in Newark, and then we get squirrels as well. Ate them, have squirrel culture. I love southern fried squirrel, my Texas background as well. But now, what about the dickens about it? Cleaning the squirrels, they can be tough. And what about cooking? Is that going to be covered? That's an integral part, no?
Exactly. Yeah, that's the great part about this program is they're going to meet us at their hunt location the day of their hunt, and we're going to give them an introduction. We're going to send them out to their hunting locations with their mentor, and then when they come back, they're in for a treat because we will teach them everything on how to clean and then cook their harvest.
That, see, listeners, all encompassing all around. And picking the squirrels, Tiffany, it's a great thing. We had Peter Stark, wildlife biologist. He handles the upland game, for an upland game. And he said, Tom, they're as numerous as ever. Probably the most underrated hunting resource in the state, and it's always been.
100%. I mean, squirrel hunting is a great opportunity for hunters to get out there, because they can go before work, after work. It's very doable. And not even just that, but squirrel hunting is great to segue into other hunting opportunities.
Right.
While you're out in the woods, you start to realize other habitats to be able and go hunt if you want to do deer, or it's a good way to get familiar with your shotgun and hunting laws and regulations to go out there and pick up another hunting opportunity.
Listen, one of the great misconceptions about squirrel hunting, yeah, you want a still shot. Absolutely. If it's up, you can see down the crook of a branch or against it, you want a still shot. Hey, you get a squirrel running along the ground, they don't run, they fly. Or going through those treetops, especially if you still have some, you know, leaf cover on there. Whoa, man, that ain't easy.
Absolutely. Okay. We always tell people, you might see them at your bird feeder, but when you go out there to hunt them, it's a whole different ball game. It seems like it's going to be easy, but It's not the same as just looking at them from your window.
And the accuracy you need, because they are I call them the Rasputin of the small game species. They are tough. That little hide on there, they are tough. Be sure of your shot. And it's like, okay, now what is the event? Is it limited in number? What's the registration? When are people notified? What's the deal?
Absolutely, yeah. So this program, it's limited in numbers just due to the fact on the number of mentors we have. We have great mentors and volunteers that volunteer their time to come out and be mentors for this program. So each location is dependent on the mentors. And application is still open. They can apply until 11:59 p.m. on Thursday, October 16th.
Coming
and
up, people.
Will notify
coming up. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yep,
sorry.
Close. And then we'll notify them at noon on Friday, October 17th.
Now, Tiffany, have these areas been scattered out for the bushy tails? It's like lizards, like deer hunting. You see a patch. Oh, there must be squirrels here. There's trees. Uh-uh. No, man.
Absolutely.
You find the habitat. Find the habitat, you'll find the bushy tails. And I'll tell you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
We have our mentors. They pre-scout these locations. So every hunting location has been pre-scouted. They know there's squirrels there, so they're in for a good treat, even if they don't get a shot.
Listen, one of my favorite areas to hunt squirrels, especially whether it's north, central, south, if you can find a cornfield and public land, you have permission to hunt. Whoa, they love acorns. Don't get me wrong. Red oaks, whatever, hickory nuts. They like the shagbark hickory, crazy. Tiff, you ever see a squirrel drag a big-ass cob of corn up a tree? Whoa!
No, but I think I would like to.
I remember I was in a tree. I'm looking around. I said, what's that stuff? What is that yellow thing over there? I'm in a tree, right? Deer hunting. The squirrel had cached all these corn cobs around me. I was like surrounded by corn. They were like little guns aiming at me. Listen, it's a great upland resource, a lot of fun. It is a challenge. And for information, where do we go?
They can go to our New Jersey Fish and Wildlife website and the R3 program. We have our own webpage there, and you can apply through there. The link and the flyer is all on there.
Okay, Tiffany, sounds like a great program. Listen, Mentored Hunt Squirrels. You want to, you know, even if you're hunting a deer hunter, you want to try something different. You want to get into the game. Squirrel hunting, great upland resource, challenging to hunt. It takes a little bit, you know, and the secret, listen to me, you want to eat them, unless you get a little one, the secret's in the parboil. Don't parboil them, you're going to be chewing on a Michelin, but their meat is unbelievable. Well, Tim, one question I want to ask you before we go, is Keith Griglock involved with this?
Absolutely, yeah, they're in for a treat. They have the Northern Hunter Education Coordinator, is a big part of this program, and he loves squirrel hunting, and he has a passion for it, so anyone who attends is in for a treat.
Good, good. One thing, what I've seen, not a lot, but enough where you start to notice it, more and more guys and gals taking advantage of the muzzleloader season in the two zones. That's pretty fat. I'm way too challenging for me. And I'm seeing more people using the air guns.
Absolutely, yeah. It just opened up a whole nother opportunity for people to get out there and go hunting, so it's great.
Yeah, the air gun, the muzzleloader, single shot. No, not in Tom P's book, man. I need the spread of the lead.
Me too. I'm with you.
Well, Tiffany, you take care. Listen, it's going to be a great program. One more time with the contact number, more information, Tiffany.
They can visit the New Jersey Fish and Wildlife website. And then our R3 program, we have our own webpage on there, and they'll be able to apply and read all the information regarding this workshop.
Listen, Tiffany Woolley, Fish and Wildlife's R3 Hunting and Shooting Program Specialist. Topic is, or was, the Mentored Squirrel Hunt coming up. Go to the page she just said and check it out. Try to get involved. A lot of fun. Tiffany, you take care. Thanks for coming on Rack and Fin.
Thanks for having me.
See ya. I'm telling you, great. I'm just loving this young blood, all this young blood. Oh, the seniors are right. They're all right. They're more, but this young blood, the enthusiasm, Fish and Wildlife, man, it is going places. Okay, grab that cup, grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P on 97.3 ESPN.
Hey, wrapping up this weekend on Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of October 11th and 12th, again in the parallel universe of Rack and Fin Radio. When the season opens or reopens, the need calls for a new year. Good luck to all who will be bear hunting this coming week. But remember, care for the bear. Vital, vital. Some of the best meat on the planet. Yeah, bears. No, it doesn't. We prefer it to venison. Joining us online right now, quick shot, Guys have been around since 2007. It's Tom Sipneski. He owns, Tom the Butcher. That's it, right up there in Warren County. I think that's Bear Hunting Area 4, 193 Harmony, Brass Castle Road there. Care for the Bear, excellent bear butcher. Had bear meat from his establishment. Top notch all the way. Care, vital, vital to enjoy the harvest. Tom, how you doing? I get a little verbose there, but you know me and my bears, I love it, baby.
Yeah, we're doing well. How you been, Tom?
Lock, cock, ready to rock. Long time no see. Tom, season's coming up. Some gnarly weather this weekend. We get that. It looks good for next week, and there are Bruins out there. We've been up in that area, I guess, since about the middle of August. And woohoo, they are all over.
There are a bunch. Yep, there's a lot of 150 to 200 pounders running around this year. So. Yep.
Now, listen, remember last week we got on Jim Oxley. He's a DEP Fish and Wildlife's Bureau of Wildlife Management Chief on the Bear Hunting Prospectus. Tom, it looks good. Care for the bear. You have a Bruin down. Again, what is the deal to get the carcass to a place like yours ASAP in good shape so they can enjoy the meat afterwards and the hide?
Well, the first thing is make sure you have get it field dressed ASAP. Make sure you have some help to get it out of the woods. Get it over to the New Jersey Fish and Game check stations, whichever one you're closest to, and then get it over to me as soon as you can. Don't go show all your buddies on back of the pickup truck.
Of
a bear you shot. Get it over to us so we can get it skinned, the fat taken off, and cooled off.
Tom, here's the thing. Again, Murray, I've seen car, and I've done it. You know, you pack the carcass with ice. That's a very, very, very oxymoron here. Very, very tiny tempo. You know, stopgap. Is it not to cooling that carcass down?
Absolutely. The hide itself is an insulator, and the bears have a lot of fat on them this year. Some of these big bears have up to 5 or 6 inches of back fat on them.
Whoa.
So you have to get the hide off it, and you have to get it cooled. You can't just put a couple bags of ice in it, leave it in the back of the truck, and say I'll take it to the butcher tomorrow. It will spoil. I guarantee it will be green in the morning.
Tom, prime cuts on a Bruin. We love it all. We have the hands back to the whole bit. What are, you know, the most popular cuts?
Most people go with the boneless. I try to do everything boneless. So boneless steaks, the stew meat. I'll tell you what, a pot of bear stew would beat any beef stew, anything you've
any day, brother. I owe one to Mike Rubel, the general manager here. Cowboys failed me on the first game of the season, but that's another story.
you're a Cowboys fan.
I'm going to tell you. I got my ass kicked up there when I lived up there with the Giants fans down here. I got my brains beat in what's left of them. But, Tom, now, you see, Regs, it's legal to quarter a bear in the field. Does that really help that much in cooling it down?
It can. I mean, if it's big, you got to do what you got to do to get it out, especially if you shoot a big one. However,
yeah.
Keeping it clean is where I would like to see it kept clean if you have cheesecloths or whatever, but it is hard to quarter a bear and keep it clean in the in the woods unless you have tarps and, like I said, help. You need help.
Joining us online is Tom the Butcher, Tom Sipneski. It's Tom the Butcher up there in Warren County, 193 Harmony Brass Castle Road. It's a bear hunting area for whenever you have your permit. Check out Bear Butchering Place. Not many people do it. It's a lot of work. Tom, very, very, very laborious. I'm not going to ask you prices because they vary, but it is definitely worth it because it is some prime meat. You possibly get a rug out of it. It's a real deal, and we have some of the best bear hunting in the Northeast.
We do, absolutely. We have two phone numbers, too, 908-689-7440 and 908-223-7103. If you're running late, we have people here. We'll stay late to make sure everything gets taken care of, even if it's 11, 12 o'clock at night.
Tom, plus you're running hundreds of deer through there, are you not?
Yeah, we got a few hundred already.
Hey, Tom, one thing about the bear fat, an old-timer told me this up in Maine many, 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 it was even before disco was happening, people, up there, the bear fat, bear oil, rendering it down, makes the best fried donuts I've ever had. Oh, that's how you did a cookie donut fry. Guy made cinnamon donut. Tom, oh my God. And he used to rub it on his elbows and knees, too. He said it cured the arthritis.
It waterproofs boots. I know that.
So did people ever request to have that separate? Do you do that or do you just dispose of it?
Yeah, we'll save the fat. If you want fat saved, we can arrange that. Absolutely.
And there was someone up there in Sussex County off Route 23 was made bear soap. Great stuff.
Yeah. Yep. There's a lady around here that does it, too.
Okay, Tom, have a great busy week next week. God spare us. I will be stopping in to see you. You'll hear me coming, as you can tell. Tom, one more time with that address and contact number, please.
Sure, 193 Harmony Brass Castle Road, Washington, New Jersey, 07882. Phone numbers 908-689-7440, 908-223-7103.
Tom, I know at least, me and Demery, probably at least 20 people down here in the southern tier counties, and I'm sure there are more. Actually, I come from 35 countries. They're going to be up that area hunting. They're going to be in 1, 2, 3, and 4. So God spares me. People get in there. You will say this is definitely worth it. Tom, you take care. Have a great season. See you in a couple of days.
We'll see you in a couple of days.
See you then. He is so correct. Care for the bear, man. It's a great opportunity. We have tremendous bear hunting. Permits are still available. Don't forget, this is segment A. It's going to go through the week. It's first few days is archery, then it closes with archery and muzzleloader. And then you have during shotgun week, you have the bear permits available also. Go, man, enjoy it. Bear meat, like he said, a pot of bear stew. Poof, make your tongue slap your brains out. Hey, God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless our first responders and law enforcement. Again, next week is going to be the North Jersey waters. The following week, it's going to be South Jersey waters, loaded with trout. See you next week. Rack and Fin Radio.